It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Pass time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Mack.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513 is your telephone number. Give us a call. Talk some Giants football. Or you can reach us on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. Lancelot, good morning. How are you?
Doing very well, John. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay. Only 5 days till Christmas, and the Giant fans this weekend will try to give their fandom a little early Christmas gift by going to Detroit and beating a very enigmatic and Jekyll and Hyde Detroit Lions team that is, you know, Dallas Cowboys-esque, San Diego Chargers-esque, where they have a ton of talent but don't always capitalize on that talent.
Mental mistakes and lapses has been their biggest issue. They basically have shot themselves in the foot time and time again over the last few seasons. And last year they went 4-12. This year many people anticipated they were going to have a bounce-back campaign because the defense was a little bit healthier, the pass rush return. But, you know, it's been very up and down, as you mentioned. And this game is going to really come down to, John, who protects the football. You have two of the worst teams in terms of turnover differential.
They are the two worst teams.
The Lions are minus 13 and the Giants are minus 17. They're at the bottom of the rankings in the NFC.
And not even plus minus, but also, excuse me, wow.
You got choked up over that.
I really did.
It's an emotional thing.
It's been ugly to watch. I don't think you can blame me. But they also have the two most total giveaways in the league. The Lions at 31 and the Giants, obviously, with Eli Manning's 25 interceptions, the Giants number one in the NFL in that category, and that's not the type of number one you want to be in the league.
Absolutely. And Matthew Stafford, keep in mind, is also up there in interceptions. Yep. He has 17 on the season compared to 28 touchdowns. In the last few games, five games, he's had 12 turnovers. That includes 10 interceptions and the two fumbles. So, you know, the quarterback play has dictated why these two teams have struggled for the most part, as the Lions have tried to deal with some of the issues that Stafford's having with his decision-making, specifically in that Ravens game when they turned the ball over three times, and that cost them late.
And the bigger problem for the Giants now is the guy we talked about on Monday as probably being the Giants' offensive MVP this year is now out for the rest of the regular season. Victor Cruz underwent arthroscopic knee surgery, a debridement procedure to clean out some cartilage in the knee. If you do some research on it online, it's a very simple procedure. It's not considered serious. It's not a ligament. It's not the meniscus. It's not the patella. It's not any of that stuff. So he should be back not only by training camp. He should be cleaned out and ready to go probably by the time the players report in mid-April. So no reason to worry long-term about that. I know a lot of people have thrown out there, well, that's the same procedure Amari Stoudemire had last year for the Knicks. Well, he is an arthritic type of knee condition. As far as we understand, Victor Cruz does not have that type of deal in his knees. So not a whole lot to be concerned about, but Lance is certainly provides yet another challenge for a New York Giants offense that has certainly been unable to meet most of the challenges they've faced this year.
Well, the season's ending as it started with the injury bug, John. Yep. They lost a handful of guys in the preseason, Andre Brown. Now they lose Victor Cruz here to close out the year. There's no benefit of playing him anyway. Might as well take care of the procedure now so that, like you said, he's ready for OTAs and minicamp.
And I want to turn this on its head a little bit, and I want to apply the same logic to Jason Pierre-Paul because it's obvious that surgery is an option at some point with that shoulder. He said it. And he's kind of been back and forth on whether or not he's going to try to play. I don't think he's playing again this year. I think it'd be foolish to play him at this point. But you don't want him to run into the same situation he did last year, where he wanted to avoid his back surgery. He waited. Finally got the procedure done. I believe it was, mid-June or so. Didn't get back until the second regular season game. Wasn't right the whole year. Injured his shoulder later on. Who knows? You know, stuff's interrelated. Neck bones connected to the shoulder bone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you don't want him to get into the same situation next year where he's rehabbing that shoulder injury because in August because he had surgery in June instead of getting it taken care of in January.
And I would say OTAs and minicamp is crucial for a guy like JPP.
No question.
Because he's still developing. He has yet to return to his rookie form, his Pro Bowl form. So, you know, they need to work him out over the course of this offseason. I agree with you. If this seems to be a lingering issue, there's no point of hesitating. You have to go under the knife, and it's something that players clearly want to avoid. But you got to take care of it now because this way you're going to be back on the field for these workouts.
And look, we're no doctor. If the doctors tell him surgery isn't necessary, then surgery is not necessary. But don't take a unnecessary risk just to avoid it. That's not going to do anybody any good.
They need JPP back to full health. It's amazing that the pass rush has actually picked up without him being fully effective. Well, if it wasn't for Justin Tuck, John, I don't think these sack numbers would be anywhere near where they are.
And Colin Jenkins, who's done a lot of damage inside. And you're right. And look, the Giants have a lot of problems they need to fix next offseason. They have a limited amount of funds to do it with. Now, it's a decent amount of money. It's not like it was last year. We got to see what they do with Elias' contract. We talked about that on Monday and Tuesday's show. But as important as a lot of these areas are to improve, they're going to have to pick and choose. And I think, quite honestly, Lance, defensive end is probably going to be one of the positions that they might have to decide they take care of internally. You hope DeMondre Moore takes a step forward. You hope Kiwanuka has a better year. You hope Jason Pierre-Paul gets back to what he used to be. Maybe you bring back Justin Tuck, considering his 9 sacks this year and the type of production he's gotten from him in the second half of the season. But I don't think they're going to be able to spend big time on a defensive end. They're going to need improvement from within, and that's going to have to come from Jason Pierre-Paul.
I don't think it's necessary, given your other needs, John, to really go out and spend money on a defense.
I don't think you can afford it.
You've got bigger priorities. You might as well use the money on an offensive lineman or some other area of concern, because clearly the Giants have plenty of concerns heading into the offseason. I think there's enough options on paper. And yes, a lot of these players have not panned out and met expectations. But with another offseason under their belt and these guys getting back to full health, I think you have enough weapons here that you can become an intimidating defensive line that has a knack for getting to the quarterback, because it's not as if JPP forgot to play football. Justin Tuck, clearly, when he's healthy, he gets back to full form. So you have enough weapons here that you don't need to necessarily go out in free agency and say we're going to spend a boatload of money on a big-time playmaker. They need to shore up perhaps some depth at the corner spot. They need to look for another linebacker, depending on what they do with John Beeson. I would put defensive linemen, to be honest with you, John, at the bottom of the list in terms of priorities.
And I agree. That's my point. That's why you're going to have to get a better performance from Jason Pierre-Paul next year if you want this defense to get back to that pass rush. Cornerback, offensive line, tight end, maybe even a wide receiver if Akeem Nicks walks away. I mean, there are a ton of things the Giants are going to have to address, and they have talent at defensive end that hasn't necessarily performed this year, but they'll need to get back to that. And I mean, Joe Journey will have another chance to play, and he showed some flashes at the end of the game last week. I don't want to get too excited. Look, that's against a prevent defense. Let's not go nuts here. But, look, we talked about all year, guys playing for contracts, guys playing for starting jobs maybe next season. Jernigan falls into that second category. Can he show something in these last two games that tells the Giants, you know what, maybe we don't need to spend big on a wide receiver. Maybe Randall at the 2 and Jernigan at the 3 is something we can at least make an option for next season, if not committing to it.
Well, it also depends what they do with him with respect to special teams, because right, as the Giants have learned, it's hard to balance both, because then all of a sudden you're prone to having an injury more often than not. So that's another decision that they're going to have to look at. I can't hesitate but think, can you imagine if Ramsey's Barden was still on this team, John, and what a golden opportunity he would have had, given the fact that they've had so many injuries to this wide receiving core? We've fielded so many calls about Ramsey's Barden over the last few seasons. If he still got a Giants jersey right now, that would have been the big talk of the town leading into this game. Instead, it's Jarrell Jernigan, who also has to take advantage of his opportunities. These are wide receivers that have been on the team for quite some time. You know, they've contributed more so on special teams. You're waiting to see how the development goes. And you're right, probably had arguably his most productive game since he's put on a Giants uniform, Jernigan, in the last contest. But how much stock can you put into a performance when it's late in the fourth quarter,
Right.
The defense really has a big cushion. This is going to be a better litmus test for Jernigan because you know he's going to have a role from the start.
And look, he's been back at practice this week, and it's also a little concerning that the one game he actually plays a decent number of snaps in this year, he comes up lame and doesn't practice on Wednesday. Now, he was back on the practice field yesterday. He's going to play on Sunday, but still, it's one of those things. It's like Ramsey's Barden.
Right, that's what I said. It's the Ramsey's Barden syndrome.
Guy plays, hurt.
You get the opportunity, and then you get banged up.
Do something good. Injury, knee. I mean, it's like freaking clockwork, man. It's unbelievable.
That, that's the script the Giants wide receivers follow if you're third or lower on the depth chart. It's true.
Oh, man. 201-939-4513. Lewis Murphy might get some more snaps this week as well.
If he can stay healthy, of course.
Well, that's another. There you go. 201-939-4513. We'll talk about the offensive line. David Dealstor is in practice. It looks like James Brewer and Brandon Mosley will get the start. Good luck against Nick Fairley and Dominican Sue. Kevin Booth, God bless you, playing center. And we'll move forward from there. To our phones, Hugo's in New Jersey. Hugo, what's going on?
Good morning, guys, and happy holidays.
Same How are you, Hugo?
Hey, you know, the only thing I have to say about this Detroit game is it just has to feel one of those games where we're going to get overwhelmed up front, you know, with their defensive linemen and given the state of our offensive line. I'm actually a little bit concerned about Eli's health, but, you know, in that building with the noise on that carpet, those guys coming off the edges, because they do have some good edge rushers too, Ansa, you know, the rookie. And
he's got seven sacks. He leads the way this season.
Yeah, and then with the defensive tackles putting the pressure up the middle, it could be a disastrous day, so hopefully they have a game plan with a lot of quick passes. You know, guys, to me, these last couple games almost feel like preseason games, and that's why we're talking about roster building and almost topics that are usually reserved for the preseason. You know, it's clear the season's going to end in a 5-11 or 6-10 record, and you could argue that really this team was worse, maybe a 2-14 team had they played some competent quarterbacks there in that middle stretch where they had some success.
So, well, Hugo, I would say, and I agree with you, and I don't think Lance, you know, jumping too far off the bridge here, but if Aaron Rodgers wasn't hurt and Nick Foles wasn't hurt, the Giants probably don't beat Philadelphia or Green Bay.
I would agree with that. I think they may have had trouble with Minnesota if it wasn't for Josh Freeman.
You know, that's fair,
stability
too.
Under center for that game. That's a good point.
Yeah. So look, I mean, I think we really got to have a different mindset going into next year with respect to roster building. You know, everyone can talk about the stars and starters, and we need, you know, two new starters on the offensive line. But I'm talking about roster-wide, because the trend I've been seeing with the Giants is that, you know, some of these roster spots don't seem to be too precious for the Giants. And you have guys who really are not contributors on the roster year in and year. I don't have to name them, you know, Beckham, Barden, so on. So Jernigan up to now, and it goes on and on. You know, Robinson. You just can't have that. You got to have a mentality that every roster spot is precious. And if someone's going to fill a roster spot, at least they have a role. They have a skill, whether it's a short down back, a third down back,
special teams
right. Ace. Yeah, they got to have a role. They just can't be a guy taking up a roster spot. I know Carl Banks is fond of calling them the guys on, you know, on scholarship, and Anita calls them the guys with nine lives. They just have weight. They don't contribute anything. And, you know, the mindset's got to be, when you make a mistake on personnel, what you're really doing is compounding the mistake by keeping those guys around year after year. I mean, I've been watching football for a long time. If a player doesn't show at least some skill set right away, you know, 99% of the time, they never do anything. They never do, you know, you could go Cedric Jones, you could go high draft picks, you know, Marvin Ross, all these guys, they never amount. You can see something right away. It doesn't have to be a full, you know, complement of skills, but something.
And no, Hugo, you're right, and I think you hit it on the head. Where you get into the issue here is you have guys on the roster that aren't contributing or taking up a roster spot because they're a higher draft pick, and you don't want to cut one of your, you know, middle-round draft picks after a year or two. But at the same time, they're not performing to the point where they can actually help you on the field. And I think that's where you get to the issue here, Lance, with depth and having guys ready to take over some of these guys that are older and got hurt, like the Chris Knees, like the David Bosses, guys like that.
And that's why, Hugo, getting back to your point, it really comes down to the draft. They need to do a better job with the decisions that they're making in those third through seventh rounds, because then all of a sudden you have the depth, and then you're keeping these guys on the roster for a reason. But because of the injuries that John just pointed out, you need to turn to your depth in a season like this. And as you mentioned, a lot of the guys that they kept around for depth when you turn to them, they barely have had any experience, and you can't call them impactful players. Adrian Robinson, for example, there's been numerous tight end issues this season. You would think he would have already had multiple opportunities to get on the field. What are you keeping him on the roster if you don't have confidence in him getting out there?
Yeah, at least as a blocking tight end. Again, it comes back to my point about at least a skill set that you can use. Hey, guys, a couple more points, if I may.
Yeah, real quick, Hugo.
You mentioned about better drafting. I hear all these people getting on Jerry Reese. I just want to remind those people who drafted the core of the Giants Super Bowl runs. Jerry Reese was what's today called the head of college scouting, right? He drafted all those players.
Well, in fairness, Ernie
Tom Coughlin type players.
Well, Ernie of course he made the final decisions on those guys. Jerry Reese gives his recommendations, and then the general manager, who's also watching tape on a lot of these guys, makes the final decision. So it's not all Jerry, the same way right now it's not all Mark Ross. Jerry Reese certainly has a hand in it now, even though Mark Ross is the director of college scouting.
Yeah, but I've seen a real drop-off in the draft since Mark Ross. And the thing that really bothers me is he's really not drafting Tom Coughlin-type players. You know, I like Pugh, but he's not the rightful successor to Kareem McKenzie. I want a power player at right tackle. I see Pugh more. Maybe he could be a good center or something someday. But, you know, he's not the prototype. He doesn't have the long arms. He doesn't have the size. You know, it's just I've seen a real diversion in terms of scouting from the things that made the Giants successful when Jerry Reese was running the draft. One final point, guys. I'm interested in looking at Brandon Mosley because I actually like this player. I think he has a bit of potential because, you know, coming out of college, he was clearly raw. But, you know, he has some ability to bend and flex, has good lateral movement. And plus, to the eye, it looks like he's put on a lot of size. So to me, it feels like he's made a commitment in the weight room. I'm like, you know, James Brewer. I remember the first training camp, James Brewer. I was like, wow, this guy is really stiff. You would think that a rookie coming in, you know, could bend and flex, you know, have good knee bend. And, well, he was way behind the guys like Snee and McKenzie and all these guys who were other veterans. I was shocked when I saw him in the first training camp. So, you know, this is like a preseason game, so I'm going to be looking at Brandon Mosley.
And
those are my 3 points, guys.
You got it, Hugo, and thanks for the phone call. And I can't think of a better opportunity for these guys to get out there than against a very good Lions front seven.
Well, you talk about throwing somebody into the fire to see how they react. That's what you're doing in a loud building. I mean, you saw Monday night they had the decibel meter up there on TV for the loudness of it. You're going to deal with that. You're going to deal with those tackles flying off the ball. And, boy, you know, is there going to be a point here, Lance, and Hugo brought this up early in his phone call, where – if they go down and the offensive line is really struggling and Eli's getting smacked around a lot in the first half, is there a point here where just to protect him that you take him out of the game?
I think you always say that, but from what Tom Coughlin said, Eli basically refuses to come out of a contest, regardless of whether or not he's taking his fair share of hits. And I was of the mindset a few weeks ago, John, where I would have said, you absolutely should not consider putting Ryan Nassib or Curtis Painter in there because Eli needs the reps and he needs to get better. But then I have myself looking at this roster and with this offensive line changing by the day, I don't even think it's beneficial for Eli Manning to get the reps in because, let's face it, this is not the offensive line that he's going to be playing behind come the start of next season.
Nor some of the wide receivers.
So what good is he really getting out of these reps at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think you want to feel better about yourself. I think Eli, just for his own confidence, maybe wants to throw some good numbers out there, throw some good passes. So, you know, you don't want to go into the offseason with the last thought in your head being 5 interceptions against the Seahawks.
Well, give him a first half, and if the game gets out of hand, see what you have.
Yeah, I can't imagine they'll ever take him out if the game's in doubt or he's 100% healthy. One of those two things, and quite frankly, probably both, would have to be compromised in order for him to get taken out of the game.
The other thing, and this is not necessarily a valid excuse to play him, but that consecutive start streak.
Who cares?
I'm sure, though, that's something that
people are
considering
and
talking about. Well, that's what I'm saying. You put him in early and then you take him out if you want
to. You don't want to artificially extend that streak, though, either, because then you start getting laughed at. I mean, you don't want to do that.
But, you know, in this day and age, when it comes to these records
and NFL
players.
Do you really think Eli cares about the record? I don't. I don't think he cares.
It's impressive, and it's a testament to his toughness. I mean, it's very hard in this day and age for any position.
Well,
look at what London Fletcher's done.
Well, maybe Eli can end the streak in honor of London Fletcher's retirement. They can do it in tandem.
Oh, boy. Well, you're really stretching
yeah,
these
that
storylines.
Yeah,
I'm going to leave that to you.
And by the way, the other point that Higo made, and he made a lot of them, is...
indeed.
Yeah, he did. That I think is a good one is drafting players that fit the system. And I think before they attack this offseason, Lance, they have to decide what they want to be. And we've talked about this before. What team do you want to be next year? Where do you want to improve and how do you want to play? And that'll determine who they go after in free agency and who they draft.
Identity. And we've been talking about that time and time again. You need to determine, do you want to go back to the hardcore running game? Do you want to be that big play game? And then that should dictate what type of personnel you bring in. And you could look at the draft, and this also piggybacks off of the point Hugo brought in. You know, when Jerry Reese talks about drafting Adrian Robinson and how he could be the JPP of tight ends, or even when they drafted a guy like JPP, a lot of the players that they've been taking, even in the early rounds, John, I would say it's more on potential than the fit in the system. David Wilson, for example, not known as a pass protector.
Right.
You take a chance. You take a risk
that you can teach
by bringing
that.
These guys into the system.
I think a lot of times, instead of drafting maybe the smart football player, they draft the athlete that has a higher upside. By the way, this is completely unrelated. As I was going through Twitter and trying to find a good comment, there's a hashtag Giants chat. I got connected to this news article from CNN, and this is totally out of left field, but I thought it was funny, so I'd share it. And apparently they had some protests in South Korea about North Korea.
Wow,
right?
We're really taking
so
this.
So North Korea threatens South Korea to strike mercilessly against them. Do you know how they extend that threat? They sent a fax.
Gotta love politics.
Apparently Paul Dottino is the one working for their communications department.
Yes, and I'm sure he sent it with his white pants on, too. That's an image.
Have you sent it a fax? Really? Is that what we're doing?
You would think that, you know, we would up the technology, wouldn't we?
Was there teletype out of order? I mean, geez. People out there probably don't know what a teletype is, showing how old I am, but geez.
And I wonder if it's the fax machine that has the regular white paper or that rolly type of paper, you know, the old school. I wonder if they've upgraded.
Yeah, like by back in elementary school when you printed out the Scantron sheets and it was like one of those.
Well, that was a pretty good impression.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm glad you're honing your craft here.
Let's go back to the phones and go to Mike in Connecticut at 201-939-4513. Mike, what's going on?
Hey, guys, happy holidays.
Same to you, buddy.
Just got a couple quick points for you. Actually, it was funny when Hugo said Jerry Reese in the drafting. I'm looking at the draft picks from 2008 to 2006. There are three players from those draft picks still on the Giants today. I think it's astonishing. They had a bunch of, you know, first round. Kenny Phillips no longer with us. Manningham's no longer with us. Steve Smith, you know, guys like that. So I think Hugo's definitely right. We got to draft better players.
Yeah, Mike, but in fairness, and look, the drafts have had a lot of busts. I'm not saying they haven't. But some of those guys, you've been caught on the bad side of some injuries that were hard to predict. Terrell Thomas, for example, missed two seasons with a knee. No way you could have predicted that. Kenny Phillips, you mentioned him with the knee. No way you could have predicted that. Steve Smith tore up his knee. You couldn't have predicted that. So while they have drafted poorly, they have run into some bad luck, too, with a lot of these draft picks and a lot of the injuries.
No, I agree. I definitely agree. But I think, you know, we got to definitely start looking at some guys that fit the system better. But I actually called in a thing that sparked my interest yesterday. There was an article on Bleacher Report, and they were talking about possibly reuniting Jim Fassel with the Giants, not as a coordinator, but as a quarterbacks coach. And I figured I'd ask you guys what you thought about that.
Well, he has familiarity with the organization.
First, I'm hearing about it. I'm not sure Jim Fassel and, you know, the system he usually used to run and, quite frankly, his personality would fit in, and a little weird bringing back a former head coach to work underneath the current head coach.
Yeah, that'd be
Honestly, it just seems like it would be an awkward situation. I think Chris Palmer, who no longer works in that in the USFL, Chris Palmer left the Giants to coach in that outdoor football league that is now defunct. I can't remember the name of the damn thing. But
it may have been the UFL, actually.
UFL. Yeah. That's right, UFL. And it's not around anymore. He's out there. Maybe you can bring him back to help out, you know, coaching up Eli or something, because he had a lot of success here. But, look, Eli's got to get himself straight. I know people talk about the quarterback coach. This guy's been in the league almost 10 years now. He's got to know what his good mechanics are. I know coaching helps, but Eli's got to be able to figure this stuff out on his own in a lot of ways.
Absolutely, guys. Just wanted to call and just run that by you guys. Happy holidays and stay safe.
Hey, Mike, thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. And, you know, that's actually not a bad point. Jim Fassel, by the way, is desperate. to get back into the National Football
League. But it would be weird, despite the desperation, that you would take a quarterback, a positional coach. I could see you coming back as a coordinator, not necessarily a positional coach. And Chris Palmer, by the way, also was the offensive coordinator for the Titans recently. So he's had some experience moving up, just like Mike Sullivan. And that would be a guy who has some familiarity and chemistry with Eli Manning. That's who I think would make sense. You want to bring a guy in that has had a success rate and a relationship with Eli.
And knows the system.
Correct. That's what he needs. He needs sort of, you know, a best friend that you can lean on. I mean, I know maybe that's not the greatest comparison, but it's almost like he's so down, and he may not be showing it, but he needs somebody that can get him back to his old self. And a familiar face can help that.
And look, it's not fair. We're not throwing this on the Giants quarterbacks coach, Sean Ryan. Certainly not. I mean, there are a million factors that have a lot more to do with his struggles this year than that. I honestly believe that. I think that's at the very bottom of the list, if it's even on the list. Look, Eli's been in this league for a long time. We've seen him play well. We've seen him play poorly. And you don't think Sean Ryan's telling him not to throw off his back foot? You don't think Sean Ryan's telling him to be patient in the pocket, don't feel pressure when it's not there? Of course he's telling him that. Eli knows. He's just not executing out there on the field.
It's true.
201-939-4513.
Real nothing to add to that. I mean, there's so many factors. I feel like we've gone over them over and over again.
For more insight like that, Big Blue Hits at 4 o'clock this afternoon at Giants.com,
hey,
by the way.
That's not a bad tease at all.
Let's go to Ed in Houston, Texas. Ed, what's going on, pal?
Hey, good morning, fellas.
How are you, Ed?
Good. Well, hanging in there in spite of the season. You know, you guys spent a lot of time talking about Eli. It's almost like the very first pass he threw in the Dallas game. That seems to sum up his season. It started on a broken foot, and it's going to end the same way, and that's just sad.
Yeah, I mean, look, it started poorly from the beginning. And, look, he played okay against Dallas, besides, you know, except for those two screen pass interceptions. The Denver game was okay. To me, where Eli's season went south, Ed, was in that Carolina game. He got hit, and I was going through the play-by-play with Carl Banks yesterday when he was working on a strategy segment, and this first five drives, I think he got sacked like six times or something like that. And it seems like whatever happened in that game really left a permanent mental scar that's never healed. And he's been feeling pressure when it's not there. He's been feeling regular pressure when it is there. But I think that game really psyched him out and, for lack of a better word, almost ruined him for the rest of the year, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah. And another thing is the depth on the roster. Considering they flashed his statistic in the first quarter of the Seattle game, and it showed total punt return yardage for Seattle and for the Giants through the first 12 games. And Seattle was 15 yards, excuse me, guys, the Giants 528 yards and three touchdowns. Now, my wife looked at me and she said, is that really that bad? And I said, look at it this way. Seattle gave up 15 yards through 12 games, and the Giants have given up over 5.25 football fields and three touchdowns. That's absurd. That might even be an NFL record. So my question to the two of you is it the special teams coach? Is it a lack of overall talent and depth on the roster because those are the guys who participate on the special teams? Or I know Weatherford's had a couple of strange games this year, but overall, where's the blame go?
Well, Ed, you got to be a little cautious, and I'm not going to sit here and make excuses for the Giants' special teams. You're right. It's been really bad throughout the course of the season. But Seattle's in a league of its own with a number like that. They have a huge disparity compared to anyone in the league. No one's even close to that 15-yard total. I mean, that is truly amazing, and it speaks volumes of their punter, John Ryan, who really elevates the football and gives his guys time to get down the field. So they've done a tremendous job. Seattle has a bunch of playmakers, young draft picks that they've invested in who have really panned out quickly. With respect to the Giants special teams, you know, I don't want to necessarily put it all on Tom Quinn, though they have had struggles over the last few seasons. It's been a trend, and that's also a scary thought. It's not as if this is the first season where all of a sudden they've had some issues.
And I feel like while fans have targeted Eli Manning, they've forgotten about all the special teams issues from earlier in the year because they haven't really, you know, shown up the past six or seven games. But let's be honest, Lance, without some of those punt returns for touchdowns, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and other mistakes, they might win a couple of those early season games, and they're in a much different predicament come the last few games of the year.
Field position is key, and they have not done any favors for the defense or the offense.
The heck with field
season.
Position? How about scores? Three touchdowns.
Well, of course.
Three.
You can't allow that to happen. But I think it gets back to Hugo's point, Ed, what he brought up early in the show, and you mentioned why the special teams is struggling. Well, look at the roster.
Yep.
Do you even have impactful players that you can even rely on to contribute in special teams alone? Forget what they give you on offense and defense. are there like 5 or 10 core guys that you feel with confidence you could put out on the field in terms of punt coverage, in terms of kickoff coverage, and they are consistently going to make stops? And the answer right now, I would say, is no. I mean, you're lucky if you have maybe 2 or 3 guys that you can rely on each and every
game. I mean, Ryan Mundy, I guess, is probably one of them. A real good core special teams guy. Pacinger, Charles James has been on those teams. But you don't have those, like, 2-3 guys that are always down there and causing havoc.
Well, Truman McBride was doing well in special teams earlier in the year, but they had to elevate him to starter.
Of course. So you need the depth then to fill in when you elevate guys who have a bigger role on offense or defense.
And DeMontre Moore has been a big player on special teams, but as many big plays as he's had almost had nearly as many mistakes. So you're right. I think. Look, you can point to the coach a little bit just because it's been, as Lance said, a trend over the past few years. But I'm not sure he's got the players out there to do what they need to do on special teams as well.
This weekend just really has me nervous, and I still think a lot of the reasons why they're letting Eli start. You guys are saying that Eli really doesn't care about the consecutive starts, but that's something to be proud of. And even if he just plays a quarter and they get him out of there, I don't see any problem with that.
And I would agree, Ed. I don't see a big problem with that either, but you do certainly want to look at the long-term issues that could arise if, God forbid, Eli Manning gets hurt. So it's really a catch-22. You want him to continue the track record and the record, but at the same time, you don't just want to throw him out for the feeding by the Wolves, as I like to call them, because the Lions really know how to get to the quarterback. The sacks are not off the charts this season, but they get their fair share of hits. And Ndamukong Suh, remember, has a track record of being a relatively dirty player who will go in for his hits even after the whistle, so they need to be cautious of that.
And by the way, let's not forget about Ziggy Ansah. Everyone talks about Suh and Fairley. Let's not forget about this guy. He leads their team in sacks with 7, and 4 of them have come in the last 5 games. He was a very raw rookie. One guy who's actually compared to a lot coming out was Jason Pierre-Paul, a guy that hasn't played a lot of football, an athletic freak, and he's starting to come into his own. So, yeah, worry about inside. But, look, Ziggy Ansah has been a beast coming off that right end, and Will Beattie's going to have his hands full.
And Willie Young's been productive, too, on the opposite side. Each of them have at least 3 sacks, so they've all contributed.
And Taylor, another rookie who backs up on that right end spot to Ansah. Ansah will move inside sometimes in their sub packages. They'll bring the other rookie, Taylor, in, who's 6'7", has got arms as long as Lance Meadow, and he's been wreaking some havoc.
Clearly, I have a big stretch. Taylor's got nothing on me, based on my days in Pee Wee football.
Wow.
I'm also impressed, by the way, with the linebacking core. I don't think that group gets enough attention. DeAndre Levy is having a career year.
Tulloch and Levy have both been very good.
Off the charts in terms of his coverage in the pass.
6 picks.
And against the run.
Tied for the NFL lead with Ontre Roll and Richard Sherman.
That's impressive for a linebacker.
It is.
To be up there in that category.
No question. 201-939-4513. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Leonard, good morning.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, Len.
Doing well, Len. Boy, that was some
good
intro.
Good,
well, thank you.
Good. Yeah, and listen, happy holidays. Before we go too far, happy holidays.
Same to you, Len.
Same to you, Len.
I hope you guys stay happy and healthy in the new year, because we need you back. And one of my points is, now listen, if we're going to start worrying about injuries, I want you guys to go easy. Maybe one of you should be pulled off the show so we can save you for next year.
Lance has been dealing with some sore tonsils the last few weeks, so we want to make sure those get lozenged a lot. He's been eating a lot of ice.
We got to start saving you guys for next year.
That's a good point.
And we want Eisen to go easy on writing those, his great stuff, because he might get hurt doing it. I mean, come on, it's football. But look, let me say something about that Seattle punter. You know, he is a terrific punter, but, you know, he's had 2 kicks blocked. And if you look back at the film, the first 2 kicks, darn, we almost got to
No,
him.
They did. You're right
we
about that.
We almost blocked the kick early. He's had 2 kicks blocked.
And
you know,
speaking of which, by the way, just FYI, this week David Akers, the field goal kicker for the Lions, has a lot of issues with getting kicks blocked. He has the most kicks blocked by any active kicker in football, I believe, with 20. 3 this year, and of those 20 he's gotten blocked, I think 5 have been by the Giants. So they could have an opportunity to block one of Akers' kicks this week.
If they remember when the ball is snapped, to put your hands up. I mean, even last week with David Wilson, I mean, he's throwing a lot of balls over the middle. Wilson's 5'11" when he's throwing from the pocket. We didn't tip one pass.
You know, Len makes a good point. When's the last time the Giants tipped a pass at the line of scrimmage?
I mean, just,
been a while.
Well, you know,
they've been doing that last season.
JPP's pick. That's
probably
it.
Count Pierre Paul's interception.
Yeah, that's it.
Maybe that was the last one. But come on, get your hands up in the air. We got some big guys. We got some tall, big, strong guys. I mean, we should be. Wilson's 5'11". I know he rolls out and stuff like that, but a lot of his passes were over the middle. It's the same thing with Romo. Romo throws a flat pass. We never tip a ball from Tony. We play him twice a year. I can't remember a tip.
Well, the one thing Stafford is good at, Len, he's good at altering his arm angle to try to get into some of those passing lanes.
Oh, my God. He may hit you in the hip with a sidearm pass.
That's true.
It's true. Yeah.
One of those sidearm passes. Listen, one guy who worries me this weekend, no one has mentioned him all week, on the Lions, and I guess we've got to talk about the opposition a little bit. On this surface, particularly, is Reggie Bush.
Yeah.
He may be, you know, if you look at this surface, of all the terrific running backs that we've shut down so far this year, Bush might have the most speed of all of them. And you put him on this surface, and he may get to the corner. I'm afraid I'm really worried about that. I think this is a big test for the Giants, particularly playing on that surface. And, boy, are the Giants going to be in a new world playing indoors. Oh, my. In December.
Hey, Len, you can make the argument, despite all the talk about Calvin Johnson, that Reggie Bush might be the most important player to the Lions. In games in which he's rushed for 100 yards, the Lions are 3-0. In games in which he's had 100 total yards combined rushing and receiving, the Lions are 6-0. So,
well, they just lost their first game, though.
Monday night. You're right, 6-1 now. Good point.
I'd love to know, of those stats, how many of those games were at home. I think he's a stronger runner at home on that surface.
You know what the funny thing is, Len? I'm happy you brought up the home and away thing. And I thought that was going to be the case, that the Lions were a much better home team than a road team. And I'm looking for the number. Here you go. Matthew Stafford, I think this is since 2010. His home record is just 14-16.
Huh.
I thought it'd be better than that.
Interesting. And he, one of his weaknesses, you know, we talk about the rush bothering Eli. He gets bothered by the rush. He's very erratic when you get in his face. And, you know, that may be the secret. Maybe it's a couple of extra, a couple of extra blitzes here this weekend.
Well, Len, it may be tough.
And let me say this. Maybe some creative blitzes, please, rather than the straight-ahead type. You know, if you're going to rush forward, that's not working. I mean, yeah. You know, some of our defensive linemen, it's like working, it's like a relief pitcher. If you throw a fastball all the time, you're going to get killed.
Well,
you got to be able to throw the slider. You got to be able to throw the curveball. I want different moves.
Well, Len, they are going up against one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. They've only given up 16 sacks, so that's tops in the NFL. Well, they've done a very good job protecting Stafford. I know you said he tends to get flustered, but he hasn't nearly seen as much pressure this season as he has in previous years.
Listen, tell Perry to get creative this weekend. We can get to Stafford. We can bother him. Maybe we pick a ball or two. Listen, one other thing. Back to the injuries. I'm going to sound a little feisty here at the end of the weekend.
Oh, we like it. We like a feisty Len.
I want to wind up saying go Giants. But listen, remember, we lost guys on the first play of an OTA when Andre Brown bumped into Hanoski and they bumped knees in short pants. I mean, it's the nature of the game. You can't worry about injuries, guys. You got to just play the game. You can get hurt in the first preseason game against the Little Sisters of the Poor. I mean, it's just the nature of the game. If you take Eli out of this game, if you're taking him out of there because you're afraid he's going to get hurt because of the aggressiveness of the people on the defensive side, you know what I'm saying to myself as a coach? I don't want any of those nine offensive linemen. I don't want them back next year. They can't play in the NFL.
That's a fair point.
If you're taking your quarterback out because you're afraid the other team is going to hurt him,
that's a good point.
Give him a one-way ticket home, guys. I mean, you can't do that.
No, you're right, Len. Good point.
Listen, you guys, are you going to Detroit? Enjoy.
We will be flying. Of course, I missed the only two 60-degree December days in probably U.S. history, and I will be freezing my rear end off in Detroit as Lance Meadow heads to the golf course.
Well, have a good trip and a safe trip and a good trip, especially coming back after a victory over the Lions. We'll talk next week. And if somehow we miss, Have a great holiday, guys.
Thank you, Len. You as well. We appreciate it, as
appreciate
always.
Appreciate the phone
Take
call,
care.
Len.
Take care.
And I agree with Len's last point, because my argument against what the Redskins are doing with RG3 is that exact argument. The fact
right.
that RG3 could have got hurt in week two, week three. How can you say all of a sudden you're trying to protect him?
No, that's true.
He could get hurt at any time.
It's a fair point. It's a fair point. All right, let's take we got one more call, and then let's take that. Then we're doing a very special picks this week. We'll go through all the games.
Oh, you want to actually make the picks on
this
show?
Yeah, why not? Have
okay,
fun.
Okay, I didn't think we were going to take it that far.
Do you want to do that?
That's
way?
Fine. I'll do that. You want to put me on the spot? I got no problem.
Oh, wow.
Maybe
you
we can do that.
Very confident.
No, I am very confident. I'm just happy that you're buying into the fact that we actually are going to pick every game, because I know you were a little rambunctious and
I don't
debating
know if
that.
Rambunctious is the right word. Let's go to Lewis in Manhattan. Lewis, what's going on, pal?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you? Happy holidays.
How are you, Lewis?
I'm good, thanks. Just a couple of things from me this morning. The point about the discussion about Chris Palmer is an interesting one, because they might benefit from having a familiar face come back and work with the quarterback. In looking at some of the highlights, even online, when they slow things down, even in some of those throws against Seattle, it looked in a couple of those places where Eli did have, you know, appropriate time to throw the ball.
Yep.
And he either underthrew or the receivers got, you know, you talked this over and over, but the receivers got out fought for the ball. But, it looked like there were a couple of opportunities to for the receiver to get past the defender, but he underthrew. And maybe it is a mechanics thing going on. I'm not really sure, but the idea of bringing and making a change maybe at that coaching position is probably not a bad idea.
It can't hurt. As we talked about at the early stages of this show, it cannot hurt when you bring back a guy that knows Eli very well and also knows what Eli's strategies are, what his tendencies are, and what type of adjustments work well for him. That's what I think he's missing somewhere.
I don't disagree with that, but I still find it difficult to put this at the feet of Sean Ryan, because if you go back to Eli's first bad year when he had all those interceptions, that was Mike Sullivan's first year as Giants quarterback coach, and people were saying the same thing then that they're saying now, that, oh, you know, the new quarterback coach, Mike Sullivan, doesn't know what he's doing. Then the next year, Eli is one of the best years of his career. The team goes on, and they win the Super Bowl with Mike Sullivan as a quarterback coach. So I'm not sure if this really is the coaching that's the root of the problem here. I find that almost ridiculous, considering Eli's been here for 10 years.
John, you're right. I think it's more likely to be, you know, obviously a combination of things. The other thing I wanted to mention is with Sunday, I think they do need to be careful about how they play Eli this week and how often they play, you know, how long they play him, because, as you know, it could get pretty nasty real fast down there with Detroit in terms of protection for him, and the whole thing could fall, be like a real fast house of cards on Sunday. So they're going to have to keep an eye on him. I wouldn't be surprised if the game gets out of hand and he puts Painter in the game. Would you guys be surprised?
Well, he did that in the last game against Seattle, so I think that's probably the mindset that the Giants coaching staff has right now. Game gets out of hand, no benefit to keep Eli in there.
And is, I lost track, but is Connor still on the active roster?
Dan Connor, no. Dan Connor's actually...
No. John, the fullback.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, so, you know, it wouldn't be surprising to see him back there a little bit more this week, or...
They need to. They're down a few running backs. Peyton Hillis is still nursing a concussion, so there's a good chance he may even get a carry or two, to be honest with you.
Michael Cox time, baby.
Yeah.
And I guess the last thing for me is more of a Christmas holiday kind of a thing. If you guys hear from both of you on this, putting, obviously, the salary cap issues aside, because there's been a lot of discussion about that and who they need to re-sign, but if you were going to quote-unquote rebuild, who would you keep? Like, who are the key guys that you would want to keep on both sides of the ball and build around? I'd love to hear from both of you guys on that.
On defense, I mean, in terms of, are we thinking just free agents, or are we thinking of guys that are already under contract and have a few years left? Because Antrell Roll, for example, is still under contract, and I would definitely do all I could to keep him.
I would build around him. I think
he'd
that's
be a
fair,
guy
yes.
that I'd throw out there. A Cullen Jenkins, I think, as long as he has a few more years left in the tank.
He has 2 years left on his contract, so they think he does.
As long as his production stays high, that's a guy worth building around. Because let's face it, they improved against the run drastically.
And a lot
and
of
that's
that
something
is
that doesn't
Jenkins.
Deserve a lot. That doesn't get enough attention this season.
And Cullen Jenkins is a big part of that. Justin Tuck's been a good two-way player, run and pass this year. I think you can bring him back. Prince at cornerback, obviously, is a guy
correct.
I think you can build around in the secondary. Past those guys, I mean, obviously.
What about Beeson? Would you want to retain him?
Yes, I would bring Beeson back. I think as he's played here more and more, we've seen some of the flaws that probably, you know, were deciding factors in having Carolina go to Luke Kuechly over Beeson and Beeson losing some playing time. He's not very good in coverage, but he's excellent against the run, and I think the great run defense this year has a ton to do with John Beeson as well as the defensive tackles.
No coincidence that things turned around when Beeson came into the mix, also because of his veteran leadership. Another guy, Lewis, that I'd throw in there to build around is Will Hill, who I think has been a very impactful player.
I'm hoping he keeps his head on his shoulders, obviously.
And in terms of offense, boy, it'd be very
Justin
tough.
Justin Pugh?
To determine who you think. I mean, Pugh, because he's probably the youngest offensive lineman and shows the most promise.
Booth is a versatile guy inside. I would like to have him on my team again. I mean, Victor Cruz obviously just signed to a long-term deal. Right. He's going to be here a long time.
Randall has shown flashes, but I got to see more out of him to really determine whether or not he's a guy that you build around.
Gotta
I'm not necessarily sold on him.
Depending on how much Knicks gets in terms of an offer from somewhere else, we'll see if they bring him back, but that's no sure thing. The tight end, I think, is going to change once again this year.
And as far as the running backs go, Lewis, you know, I like Andre Brown. I like his fire. But, you know, you have to wonder about the injury history and David Wilson, too. Yeah. I don't know if there's a running back on this team that right now I could see being on this squad and being the leading carrier 2 or 3 years from now. And I'm being honest with you. I don't know.
And it's not that they don't have the talent. It's just the health factor.
Yeah. Could be a game of musical chairs moving forward. I think they still need to find that running back to build around.
Thanks, fellas.
All right, appreciate the call. 201-939-4513, hashtag GiantsTech. Good job on the phones. Good job on Twitter as well. Any interesting tweets coming in on hashtag GiantsChat there, Lancelot?
Well, a couple of people just thought that Hugo brought up a lot of good points on that first call, which we would agree. Also, you had some reaction about Jim Fossil, your boy Mike Farmer, saying that he could get behind that type of move.
Well, Jim can come here. He can put all his chips in the middle of the table. And, you know, he can guarantee a playoff berth at 7-4 with the worst team on the schedule coming up next.
Saraceno, another big contributor on Twitter at SJS0816, when you were talking about how you went back and looked at the film in the Carolina game and how Eli was getting hit, he brings up the point that, you know, maybe it really comes down to trust, and Eli doesn't have a great deal of trust with the guys playing in front of him, which I think is a really good point.
I think that's fair.
That gets to you mentally, and then you start to second guess, and that gets back to what you were bringing up earlier, John. You start to anticipate pressure when the pressure is not even there because you have no trust in your offensive line.
Happy feet. You get happy feet.
And that, I think, has been a big contributing factor. And the other thing that I wanted to bring up regarding, you know, people are trying to determine, is it the coaching staff? Is it decision-making as to why Eli took a dip? And you talked about the last time he had 25 interceptions. Similar questions about Mike Sullivan were coming to the forefront. And we talked about this on the air and off the air. The last time he had 25 picks, remember, a lot of them were tip balls. So there was a distinct difference between the decision-making of Eli Manning in 2010
even accuracy
versus
too.
This season. Correct. Because he was making throws, and it wasn't necessarily all on him. It was just, hey, the ball wasn't bouncing your way.
I agree. This has been a much worse year.
So you have to take that into consideration. Once again, we're not throwing Sean Ryan under the bus, and it's not just him because...
No, of course not.
Clearly, if you're blaming Sean That's Ryan, crazy. Then you have not watched this season.
Right.
You have not watched the offensive line. You have not watched the lack of a rushing game. There's plenty of other factors.
Million. Now, we're going to get to our picks in a second. Why don't you bring up the schedule? We'll go through them one by one. But I'm going to throw this out to our fans on Twitter as well, hashtag GiantsChat. I want to get Lance's opinion. As you all know, Lance, I have been the Super Bowl of one of my fantasy football leagues.
Oh, boy.
And right now, by the way, the computer, you know, generation of the results has it a 155 to 155 tie.
Wow.
That's pretty crazy. Now, here's my big decision this week, and I'm having trouble. I'm going back and forth.
We're going back with the tight end issue. This is our league, right, I'm assuming?
Huh?
This is our league.
Yeah, it is our league. That's correct.
Just want to clarify.
Well, no, I mean, honestly, I think I'm going to start Antonio Gates this week as my utility guy over Harry Douglas and Greg Jennings. I'm going to do that because Harry Douglas had two bad weeks in a row. I don't really trust the Vikings passing game. So I'm going to go with Gates. I've kind of stuck with them all year. I'll stick with Antonio Gates. And they're not playing a great opponent this week. They're taking on Oakland. So
you did bench him last week, if memory serves
me. And Harry Douglas didn't do a whole lot. So whatever. Anyway, but my bigger point is I've rolled all year with Russell Wilson and Cam Newton as my starting quarterbacks. Cam Newton's probably played 3/4 of the time. Russell Wilson a quarter of the time. Now, mostly as a block to the team I'm playing, who has kind of mixed and matched their quarterbacks this year, I picked up Kirk Cousins this week just so they wouldn't have him. But now I'm thinking do I go with Kirk Cousins against the Cowboys?
That is a very tough
situation.
With that
terrible passing defense.
That's an attractive option.
I know, dude, I know, I'm telling you.
Let's see. Russell Wilson has Arizona.
Nope, I don't want to start him.
That's a tough defense, by the way, for Arizona.
Russell Wilson has been removed from the equation.
Okay, so you're not even taking him into consideration.
No, the question is, do I start Cam Newton at home against the Saints? Or do I go Kirk Cousins at home against Dallas?
Well, Cam struggled against the Saints defense in that first matchup. They
in
got
the dome,
to him
though.
A lot.
In
correct.
The dome,
and the Saints are a different team when they're on the road this season, whether they're in a dome or they're outdoors. Boy, do you put the Super Bowl in the hands of Kirk Cousins? Wow.
I
Boy,
told you, it's a tough decision,
you
right?
You would have a big pair of you-know-what if you went that route. I'll be honest with you. I think you need to grow a pair and actually go with Kirk. I'd go with Kirk.
Anita Marks, the fantasy guru, of course, also is encouraging me to start Kirk.
Well, then in that case, I think I'm going to go the other way.
No, By the way, keep in mind, both games right now, the forecast is for rain. Also for Russell Wilson's game. Apparently it's raining across the entire United States, by the way, on Sunday, according to my weather
forecast.
Let
me tell you this. If it was the middle of a snowstorm, I'd still have confidence in Kirk Cousins solving that Dallas defense. Let's be honest.
Well, there isn't really much solving to do. All you got to do is copy, right?
Correct. I'd go with Kirk.
You go with Cousins? And fans, I want your opinion. You've listened out there. Go to hashtag Giants chat. Newton against the Saints or Cousins against the Cowboys.
Yes, take out precious time in your daily life so John can decide who he's going to start in his fantasy league.
Well,
stimulating topic.
Do you want me to be in a good mood on Monday morning or not?
Listen,
I can be
very
cranky.
I just want you to be chippy on Monday because, you know, we'll be setting the tone for the final week of the season. I'm all for whatever gets your work done.
I'm curious, actually. Does anybody have someone playing on Monday night? Brandon Marshall plays Sunday night against me. Oh, I'm going to have to sweat that
out. The Monday night game is Atlanta-San Francisco. See, if you started Harry Douglas, then you'd have somebody to look forward to on Monday night. Just think about that.
Or, again, I could start Greg Jennings or Cordarrelle Patterson, who's available as a free agent in our league, against the against the Bengals, but
I thought we're talking about Monday night. You jump around here.
Well,
so impossible to follow you with your conversation.
Sorry. Anyway,
we're talking about having the benefit of a Monday night game.
Right.
You're jumping to the Vikings Bengals.
Well, I was just hoping
next
I was
going to break down the NFC South.
I was just hoping.
Come on.
I was just hoping I wouldn't have to wait until Monday night to know who won this thing. But my opponent is the only Sunday night player going too, so that could be a sweated out.
I wouldn't. You can't make decisions based on that.
No, I wouldn't. I'm just saying.
Let me get back to the quarterback situation. What does your gut tell you initially? Because you need to also consider what you're feeling. Where did you go? Because you picked Kirk Cousins up for a reason, and I guarantee you, it wasn't just to prevent your opponent.
It was a little bit of both. My natural instinct is to stick with the guy that got me there,
and I can't necessarily argue with that.
But if I go totally based on opinion on who I think is going to have a better game, I think Kirk Cousins is going to put up more points. But do you know what scares me a little bit? I made the same exact move in week 6 this season when the Philadelphia Eagles came to town to play the Dallas Cowboys. Nick Foles was coming off a 4-touchdown game, and I started Nick Foles, and he gave me nothing. So that's what gives me some pause.
And I can speak from experience, too. And based on my experience, I probably should advise you to pick Cam because last season I was in the semifinals. I had the best record in another league. And I benched Matt Ryan against the Giants because I thought that the Giants' defense, they sometimes play up to their opponent,
sure,
which clearly didn't turn out. And I went in favor of Josh Freeman against the Saints' defense, which you remember last season was the worst defense.
In football.
He had the worst performance of the season, Josh Freeman, against the mediocre defense of the year. And it wound up costing me a shot at the title. So sometimes you look at the Dallas defense on paper. Given what's on the line, Dallas' defense could have its game of the year.
Because it is a very important
game
for them.
So, you know what?
Also an
now
important
that I
reconsider
game
for Saints-Panthers, too.
I actually may advise you to go to Cam.
See,
I'll
this is what I've been doing
all
week.
Tough because
all
you know,
week
you know
I've been going back and forth, and you're not helping
well,
me.
Well, sometimes, though, we jump and we look at the juicy matchup on paper, but the juicy matchup on paper actually could come back to haunt you. So, you know what? I'm going to change my suggestion. And the fact that Anita's advising you is more of a reason I'm going to change it. I'm going start Cam against the Saints. Because you know what? That game's going to be competitive. They're going to go back and forth. I don't think it's going to be as lopsided as the first meeting. You know, normally you make adjustments when you see a team in the span of 2 weeks. I think Cam against the Saints is a good matchup at home. I would lean towards Cam.
My man Kunal on Twitter says start Newton. Saracino says start Cousins. Damn
of course,
it.
Yeah, that doesn't
no
help
No one is helping me.
I changed my mind.
David Rochester, what does the Tino eat at of Christmas
course.
Dinner?
Why am I not surprised that he didn't add anything to the conversation?
What is he? He is an unhealthy obsession.
Listen, Dave's not interested in fantasy implications. No, Dave is interested in what Paul DeTino is doing with his life.
I mean, I imagine DeTino probably has a Italian feast. I think in Italian households, isn't fish a big thing for Christmas? I think that's correct, right? So he'll probably have a nice little fish dish.
Oh, my God. I guess you're giving me more material for the pregame Sunday. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm always looking for new material.
You know, I'm not sure if DeTino likes fish, though. I've never seen him eat fish.
This conversation is getting really weird.
Well, blame Dave for Rochester. All right, let's get to our picks before we wrap this sucker up before Nile comes strolling in from wherever he is and decides to end the show.
Taking more time off from his time off. Anyway,
I was listening to the car, guys. It sounds great, but you're really getting into some nonsense here. You should wrap up the show. Okay,
all right, every single game. Now, bear with me here because I got to mark these down as you make your picks else I'm going to forget here. All right, so let's start at the top. We'll go in order in terms of the kickoff times. Miami at Buffalo. Important game for the Dolphins because if Baltimore starts to fall off, now that Flacco's hurt, Dolphins can sneak in here with that six seed, and they've been playing very good football, running a four-game winning streak.
And by the way, one more point I want to make, and I'm totally going us back to where we were before.
What else is new?
I know. The computer, by the way, projects Cam Newton at 24.02 points and Kirk Cousins at 22.98. So it's a 1.04 point difference on
another
the
projection. So-called guru. I mean, just what we need. Go with Cam. Go with Cam. Here's the thing you need to also ask yourself.
I'm going to be a mess.
And this is a fair question.
I'm going to be a mess on Sunday. If you hear all the wrong spots playing on the radio broadcast, that's why. I'm not going to be paying attention to our Fact or Fiction in the pregame show. All I'm going to be doing is paying attention to Cam Newton playing the New Orleans Saints.
But this is what you need to ask yourself.
What's
Tuesday
that?
Morning when you wake up and you see the result of the game, win or lose. Let's say you lose.
I'd be more upset if I lost with Cousins than if I
there
lost
you
with
go.
Newton.
There you go. That sums it up.
And I think that's a reasonable point of view to have, right?
Absolutely, it's reasonable. And that's why you go with Cam. That's another reason. Because you can accept and digest the fact that you lose with the guy, like you said, that got you there. But can you really accept the fact that you lost with a guy that you picked up on the waiver wire a few days before the game?
It's hard to accept. And also, there is some synergy here. The team that I'm playing, both David Arnott and Ben Valentine, live in North Carolina. And one of them covers the Panthers. So that could be a little bit of a karma thing going my way. And they're both a big Cam fans.
God. I don't even want to. I have nothing to add to that. I mean, that is a stretch of the imagination to a degree that I don't even think I can measure at this
anyway,
point.
Okay, let's get to the picks.
Okay, Miami at Buffalo.
Fans, I'm sorry. Yes. My head's so wrapped around this, I can't get past it.
I'm going to go with the Dolphins in this game because I think momentum is starting to shift in favor of them. They also had a bad loss to Buffalo earlier this season, and you tend to split the season series with your division rivals.
I will go Miami in this game as well. I think Buffalo is on the decline here. Like you mentioned, Miami is playing extremely well. EJ Manuel not going to play in this game for the Buffalo Bills. Give me the fish.
See, I'd ask Dan for his picks, but I know Dan is going to wait till right before kickoff on Sunday, so there's no point of asking him so I can write it down because Dan is also in our league. Dan Salamone, one of our top writers
here on
Giants.com.
In the lead, by the way.
Yes, correct. He has surpassed DeTino. Finally, somebody has... Making some respectable picks each and every week to get past the team. Okay, Minnesota at Cincy, a game that clearly you have a great deal of interest because you're worried about Jennings and Patterson.
Not to mention the fact I also have Adrian Peterson. So I will go Minnesota in this game because I think, we're just picking win or lose, right? I was thinking about the spread there.
Oh, boy, come on.
I'm going Bengals.
I thought we were going to differ on that
I'm
one.
Sorry. I'm looking at a sheet that has spreads on it, but just all we do is pick winners.
Well, the spreads
here, so
don't matter here. Exactly.
I know
you're not worrying about an
Bengals.
Upset special. We're doing
Bengals.
Every game. I'm going to go Bengals, too. This is another team that, you know, has to win. Because can you imagine, think about this.
I think it's going to be a close game, though.
It will, absolutely. Well, Cincinnati doesn't win by lopsided affairs other than maybe that Cleveland game. The Bengals could potentially miss the playoffs. They could go from wrapping up and running away with this AFC North to missing the playoffs if they don't take care of business in these final
Baltimore.
Two games. Because Baltimore plays Cincy in Week 17, and Miami holds the tiebreaker on Cincy. So Miami could sneak in as the wild card. Baltimore wins the division, and Cincinnati's home on the couch.
And then your Super Bowl
correct.
Pick is out of the thing,
oh,
which
boy.
Is really all Lance Mendel really
cares about.
That would
be tough
about.
To digest. But I like the Bengals in this game. I think they're due for a bounce-back game. You know, they were in it against the Steelers, but they always have that letdown game. And I think that was the letdown game. I think they get back on track against Minnesota. And Minnesota, remember, has been very up and down this season. Who would have saw them putting 48 points up against the Eagles last week? That was a big wow factor.
Next game?
Indianapolis at Kansas City in what will be likely a preview of a first-round matchup.
And I think it'll be the preview of a first-round blowout. I think the Colts are probably going to end up being the worst playoff team in the NFL this year. I think they're going to get wiped out. Their offensive line struggles. Without Reggie Wayne, they don't have playmakers outside. I think Andrew Luck has a very rough day, and Kansas City romps.
Kansas City's front seven getting healthier, so that's one advantage for them. And how about the offensive performance by Alex Smith and company recently?
How about Jamal Charles last week?
Well, but also Alex Smith has been passing the football.
I'll be playing in my fantasy Super Bowl this year as well.
Everything comes back to this
yes,
fantasy
it does.
Game. Oh, my goodness. Yes, Jamal Charles did have a good game in reality, so I will give you that. He had the five touchdowns. We can at least agree on
that. Just because you're savvy, you're not in your championship Super Bowls, don't take it out
on me. You
know what?
I've been actually very relaxed.
No, you have been.
I was so out of it this season that, you know, normally I'm like you. Oh, my God. Who am I going to start? What am I going to do? I'm actually looking at things from a reality perspective here.
Reality
I am very into just the X's and O's of all the teams this year. Not even thinking about fantasy. I was knocked out of my other league because of Eli Manning. So, and I was running away with that league, by the way, regardless of Eli Manning's interceptions, another league. I was running away with that league, and then it just hit the fan. Woo! I went down the toilet very quickly.
First round of the playoffs done?
I didn't even make the playoffs.
Oh, you didn't
because
make the
I
playoffs?
Went on like a three-game losing streak.
Oh, boy.
Lost on a tiebreaker to get in for that last spot on points. It's unbelievable.
Adam Schein knocked you out?
No, he's not even in that league. He was too chicken. That's a whole other story. Tampa Bay at St. Louis. Two teams that are not going anywhere, but have been playing good football.
You know what? St. Louis, though, I mean, they had the big win last week, but before that, they really struggled for a couple weeks. They've really been a Jekyll and Hyde team this year. I'm having trouble figuring them out. On the other hand, I feel like Tampa has been playing a lot better recently. I think they've been very solid. Despite the fact that St. Louis, I'm going to go Tampa in this game.
I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to go Rams because I think this is a team that mathematically is out of it, but they're a team on the rise, and this is a team to watch out for next season. They got a very young nucleus on defense.
They do.
They've been running the ball effectively with a guy that you probably would not even recognize if you looked at his name 1,000 times on the computer.
Zach Stacy,
Cunningham. They find these guys out of the woodworks, and all of a sudden they plug them in. So St. Louis has a lot going right for itself. I like the Rams in this game, especially that they're at home. They've been playing good football there. Next game, Cleveland at the Jets here at MetLife Stadium. A must-watch football game.
Jeez, boy. This is a real barn burner, huh? I'm going to go Cleveland. I just think the Jets are struggling a lot. The Browns' pass defense has actually been very strong this year. I think Josh Gordon will make a couple of big plays through the air on that porous Jets secondary. I'll go Cleveland.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and take the Jets in this game. I'm not very confident.
Flip a coin.
Really, it could go either way. But there's always that game that you think the Jets are going to get blown out and they wind up winning.
Well, I don't think they're going to get blown out.
Well, Cleveland's been playing very well. I mean, their offense has been looking better and better each week. Josh Gordon, Jordan Cameron.
Jason Campbell's been throwing
got a lot of good weapons on the team. But I think this is a game, actually, that the Jets' defense can actually win.
Maybe.
Regardless of how the offense performs.
Expecting to give Edwin Baker a lot more carries this year, the Browns, at the running back position.
Wow. I don't even recognize that name, and you don't usually pull a quick one on me. Woo! Got to go back to the drawing board after a comment like that. Edwin Baker. Goodness.
Edwin Baker.
Boy, you know you're into fantasy when you... Why didn't you pick him up off the waiver wire?
I did.
Why am I not surprised? Answered my own question. Moving along, Dallas against Washington. Edwin Baker. Oh, man, I can't believe we're bringing that up on Giants.com. 5'8",
200 pounds.
Okay, Cowboys and the Redskins.
Oh, boy. Honestly, I think both... Philadelphia and Dallas is going to lose this week. I'm going to go Washington in this game. Dude, why would you ever think the Cowboys are going to a football game at this point with the way that defense is playing? Unless Tony Romo throws for 450 with no turnovers on 50 passes and Murray goes for $125, every time the defense gets on the field, they give up a touchdown. Every single time.
I could see, though, this being the game where they actually tease the fan base again. They win.
Oh, give
only
them hope?
To have the letdown game against Philadelphia.
You know what? That's
why I'm
not
going with Dallas in this game.
That is not a bad theory. I'll buy that.
Now you're not going to change
nope.
your pick on me.
I'm sticking
okay.
Redskins.
At least we are set with that. New Orleans at Carolina.
And, dude, by the way, the Cowboys' run defense is horrendous.
Oh, it's been awful.
And
listen,
with Alfred
about
Morris,
the defense
couldn't you see Alfred Morris going for like 250 in that game? Another reason I'm worried about Cousins is my quarterback, in case he just run.
And that's a good point, and especially if they want to milk the clock and have long, sustainable drives, keep the Dallas defense on the field. Plus, Alfred Morris had a big game in Week 17 last year. Remember, that was a big reason why Washington won.
Bingo.
New Orleans at Carolina, which to me is the must-watch game of the week. Because this is going to decide the NFC's
out. And I will go Carolina this game. I think they're playing much better football at this time of year. They're at home. The Saints not quite as good outdoors. If the rain is there, it'll slow the game down, which I think will help Carolina, though it might slow down their pass rushers, which will hurt them. I will go Panthers in this game in a close one somewhere in the 20s.
I'm going to go Panthers, too. I think the Saints are going to settle for a wild card. I've said this all along. I think Carolina has been the more consistent team. And until the Saints prove to me that they can play up on the road, John, and it doesn't matter, as I mentioned earlier in the show, if they're in a dome or they're outdoors. I mean, they didn't perform very well against St. Louis last week, and they also had some field goal issues with Garrett Hartley, who they released, and they brought in Shane Graham. But I like Carolina in this game, and I think Carolina's got a lot of momentum. They're going to win this division when it's all said and done. Tennessee is at Jacksonville, and we could put that up there with the Cleveland Jets game as a game that I'm sure everybody will be paying very close attention
to. You know, I'm going Jacksonville. They've played so much better the second half of the year. I'm going to roll with the Jaguars, and I think they'll run the ball a little bit, whether it's Maurice Jones-Drew or Jordan Todman, whoever plays. I believe they will come home with that victory.
I like Jacksonville, too. This was a joke of the NFL team early in the season when they went 0-8, and they have been able to turn things around, so you got to give a lot of credit to Gus Bradley. There's some young guys on this team who clearly are looking to make a statement. You know, Tennessee's been very up and down. The fact that Jacksonville's at home, I think that that gives them a slight edge, so I'll go with the Jaguars in this contest. We've got Denver at Houston, a team that has not won its first two games.
I don't need to explain why I'm picking Denver in this game.
Houston has what we like to call mailed it in. So, therefore, we will go with the Broncos in this game.
They are heavy investors in the Federal Express.
Oh, boy. Are they playing for that top pick?
What can Brown do for you?
Exactly. Giants at the Lions. We never pick our game, so we'll continue that track record. We'll move along to Arizona at Seattle.
I think Seattle home, you have to pick the Seahawks in this game. And I realize they're not playing for a ton at this point. They're probably going to get the home field regardless. But I will go with Seattle at home. I think this is a game where Carson Palmer has one of his three or four interception games and gets roughed up a little bit in that offensive backfield.
Seattle hasn't lost a game at home since Russell Wilson took over under center.
Undefeated.
So it's hard to go against them, though Arizona deserves a lot of credit. And I don't want to spend a lot of time breaking them down, but honestly, if I have my vote for Coach of the Year, it goes to Bruce Arians.
Look at what
he's done for that franchise. Regardless of the X's and O's, he's turned around the culture, and that's difficult to do in a very short period of time. Pittsburgh at Green Bay Packers, believe it or not, they're still alive. Aaron Rodgers unlikely to play. It's going to be Matt Flynn because he has yet to be medically cleared. And the Steelers are still playing very good football even though they're out of it.
And the Packers will not be alive after this week. I think the Steelers go into Green Bay and win that football game. Even though the Packers came back and beat the Cowboys last week, to me, I wasn't overly impressed with them, especially on defense. I think Pittsburgh will control the clock in this game. I think they'll run the ball all over them. They'll have a couple big plays down the field. The Packers, as you know, play a lot of that tight man-to-man, so there will be openings if they can protect Ben Roethlisberger. I think the Steelers go in there and they win by a couple of scores.
We're agreeing way too much, which is always a troubling factor. I'm going to agree with you, too. Matt Flynn's played very good football, and I think you got to give him a lot of credit. Well, but you know what? Considering what he did in Oakland and Seattle, it's truly amazing.
Good
and that's
point.
Maybe more of a reflection of the Green Bay system than necessarily him as a quarterback because he's back in his old backyard with Mike McCarthy and so forth. But I do like the Steelers. Green Bay, I think, has hung around because the Lions have made it easy for them. This is the week where we put an end to that. Oakland at San Diego.
San Diego, they're playing great football.
Very
I think they're
football.
Closing the season very strong. I think they will be early playoff favorites last year, maybe not winning the AFC West because of the Chiefs and the Broncos, obviously, but I think they'll be in the mix of the wild card next year for sure. I like the way San Diego's playing. I think they blow Oakland out of the water.
I would agree with you. It's unfortunate that San Diego lost a lot of heartbreakers early in the season.
They'd be right in the mix.
Not only would they be right in the mix, they're the type of team, John, that could make a Super Bowl run. That team that gets hot, gets the wild card, and just takes it all the way.
I agree.
This could have been their year.
They have the quarterback for it. They have the offensive
Correct.
Weapons. Their defense has been poor, but has played better the last couple of weeks, starting with that Giants team, really. And I agree with you, but too little too late at this point, right?
New England at Baltimore. New England let an opportunity slip away to get that top overall seed because they would have owned the tiebreaker on Denver and the Ravens. They've got to win out because they've got a number of teams chasing them, specifically the Dolphins. Patriots haven't lost back-to-back games since early last year. They're a very good team in bouncing back. I'm going to go New England, too.
I'm going to go Baltimore, and that's just because I don't think New England right now is a very talented football team. They just don't have a lot of good players. They have a revolving door at running back because none of their running backs can actually run the ball without fumbling. They have nobody to throw the football to.
That's the fantasy guru talking, by the way. But continue.
That's true. Stephen Ridley's in the doghouse.
Well, you were rooting for Ridley going to the doghouse last week. I heard the conversation in the front of the broadcast booth.
It was Vereen, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies.
And he fumbled and got put precisely in the doghouse.
But I heard the analysis from John Schmuck last week. Oh, well, he's going to go to the doghouse. I'm going to wrap up this win because Vereen, he's going to get benched in the second half, not going to get a lot of carries. Oh, this is great.
And it was true. You're just very jealous.
The amount of times that you pat yourself on the back, I lost track.
I didn't even do that. You did that yourself.
I'm glad you're picking the
Ravens. I'm going Baltimore. The hell with you.
Joe Flacco, by the way, sprained MCL.
That's fine.
Bad offensive line.
Fine.
Okay.
Patriots offense.
Not liking
stinks.
That combo.
Going Ravens.
They're good enough.
They're scrappy.
Chicago at Philadelphia.
I'm going to, much like I picked against the Cowboys, I'm going to pick against the Eagles here. I think the Bears' offense is going to be too much for that Eagles' defense. I think, you know, and really the only fitting way for the NFC East to be decided this year, both the Cowboys and the Eagles will lose their final games heading into that final week, and whichever team screws up least in Week 17 is going to go to the playoffs.
And even if one team wins, well, if the Cowboys win and the Eagles lose, they're going to be tied, and it's still going to come down to Week 17.
Look, the Eagles' cornerbacks are big, and they're physical. You can do that against a lot of wide receiver cores in this league. You can't do that against Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey. They'll eat you for lunch. They'll eat you for breakfast. It'll be bad. I think they're going to abuse them, not to mention the fact that Eagles' run defense hasn't been strong all year. I could see Matt Forte having a big-time game. Now I worry about LeSean McCoy running against a porous Bears run defense.
Worst.
That could be a problem. I think this game's in the high 20s, low 30s. I think the Bears win a thriller.
I like the Bears, too, and you're right. The Bears have been giving up over 150 yards per game on the ground. That's the worst in the NFL.
Also, keep in mind, if the Cowboys win their early game, this game is meaningless for Philadelphia.
That's a good point. So what does Philadelphia have to play for? Maybe rest some of the guys. Similar to, if you recall, I think it was 2 years ago, Romo gets hurt in the game. That was actually before they played the Giants, right? And they were at home against Philadelphia. The Cowboys knew they had nothing to play for.
Right.
They take Romo out of the game. They don't bring him back in, and they rested him up. And remember, there was always the question, how would Romo perform against the Giants? So it could be a similar storyline.
No question about it. So we'll see what happens. I think both teams lose, so I don't think that's going to be a factor. However, I think the Bears probably are just a better team than Philadelphia right now, so I'll pick Chicago. I think they have more talent on offense. I think Cutler, a second game back, plays a little bit of a
cleaner
Correct. Game.
It was important to get that game under his belt against the Browns. And before we go to the last game, one quick thing that I wanted to throw out, because you brought up how physical this receiving core. I'm beginning to think Chicago actually would have a very good chance against that Seattle secondary, more so than any other team.
I'll tell you what. I would love to see Alshon Jeffrey and Richard Sherman have some jump balls against each other.
That'd be a great matchup.
Throw Brandon Marshall in the mix. You know what? I'm rooting for that as a second-round playoff matchup, Lance. That is an excellent, excellent point. I'll pat you on the
back.
There
we go. Thank you. Well, once in a while, I get a pat on the back. But that would be a good matchup. And
great.
Lance Briggs is coming back now. Maybe the defense improves a little, especially
Jay
against
Ratliff
the run.
Jay Ratliff at tackle, though he hasn't done a whole lot. I'm sorry, Jeremiah Ratliff.
Which I can't get used to, by the way.
Shut up.
I don't really understand that, but that's a whole other thing. And the Monday night game, Atlanta at San Francisco, wraps up our picks.
Oh, you got to go 49ers. The Falcons stink.
Last game at
that's
Candlestick Park,
my
by
analysis.
The way.
Oh, wait, really? Is that the last game at Candlestick? I thought it was opening in 2 years. It's next year, the Niners ball
Did
stadium?
I misinterpret that? Maybe I did.
Maybe I'm
I think
wrong.
It is
it
the
opening
last
next
game.
Year?
Let me make sure
oh,
of that.
Oh, thank goodness. I didn't have to step foot in that brutal 49er broadcast booth ever again. I'll sign up for that.
Yeah, last game.
Oh, thank goodness. That broadcast booth stinks. There's one outlet in the whole thing.
Oh, you got to be creative then in that setup.
We were linking power strip to power strip. I felt like Inspector Gadget in there trying to figure out how to get things to work. It was bad. San Diego wasn't much better. Don't get me wrong.
Really? San Diego's also rough.
Dude.
Wow.
People told me they would never put a Super Bowl there again. I know why. Dude, it's
Qualcomm Stadium.
It's rough. It's not a good look. That's why in our fact or fiction segment in the pregame show of that game, my bold prediction was that the San Diego Chargers will move to Los Angeles, and they will be the Los Angeles' new
I
football
I thought you were
going
to say the bold prediction would be they'd add another outlet by next season. That would have been some bold prediction.
They will hire an electrician to improve the power situation. No.
Yes.
I believe the Chargers will be playing football in Los Angeles within 5 years.
Would make sense.
Makes sense, you know, the fan base, Doesn't shift all that much. It's only a couple-hour drive. It works. I'm going with that.
Plus, you got an exciting team, especially if they keep that nucleus together. A lot of young guys on that squad.
All right, Lance, final thoughts here. Giants and Lions. To me, whichever team here makes the fewer mistakes is probably going to win. But I just have a hard time believing the Giants' offensive line can block up this Lions' pass rush. And I think that's going to be the difference. I don't think they'll be able to protect the quarterback, and I think that's going to be the end of the Giants this week.
Well, it's going to come down to turnovers, as I said at the top of the show. I mean, these teams can't protect the football. The less of worse evils, essentially. The Lions, maybe, who've done a slightly better job, but I think also the pass protection, as you brought up, this front seven is very good at wreaking havoc for offensive lines. And look at the track record for the Giants. I mean, have they really done a good job protecting Eli Manning? I mean, they had trouble against Seattle. They had trouble against Carolina. I'd throw the Lions right in the mix. I think Detroit is going to really test this Giants offensive line early, and they're going to have a great deal of success. And the other thing that concerns me, it's a juicy matchup on paper because the Lions secondary is nothing to write home about, but I don't think the Giants are going to have the receiving core to stretch these guys out with the loss of Victor Cruz. Can Jernigan make plays in back-to-back weeks?
And remember,
I'm really not sold on that.
Without the extra attention going to Victor Cruz, you're going to have a man over the top on either Knicks or Randall, making it even tougher on those guys. So I agree with you. I don't think the Giants will be able to score with Detroit. I mean, we're not in the prediction business here, but look, the Giants will have to score in the 20s if they want to win this game. And without Victor Cruz and that offensive line the way it's banged up, it's going to be hard for them to get to the 20s.
Here's another factor real quickly. Jeremy Ross on special teams. Giants have had trouble on special teams.
Well, he had those two returns in the snow.
But he's a quick guy, and he can wreak havoc too. So, you know, that should be an area of concern. The other thing is the Lions are great against the run. So if the Giants can't pass, I don't even know if they'll have a great deal of success on the ground.
Lance, we appreciate the time.
Sounds good.
And if you want more of this excellent analysis from Lance Meadow and me trying to guide him through the program, you can check out Big Blue Hits later on today at Giants.com at 4 o'clock.
Because I need all the help I can get, clearly.
Lance gets well-dressed. He has a little suit on. It's very nice.
A little suit. Oh, that's true. It is little. I could argue that.
Anyway, tune in. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. Lance and I will be back next Monday. Right now, it looks like no show Tuesday and Wednesday. We'll see what happens, and we'll go from there. Everybody, have a good one. We'll see you later today on Giants.com.